Mr. Hayes, Real Fire. Now, before we go on, I just want to make it clear. We've just been talking about the photograph with the 36-odd fitters on. And you want to make clear that that was the whole of the regiment's fitters.
Yes, which somebody pointed out to me at one of the reunions.
So, in your squadron, the fitters was how many? About 12?
About 12, maximum. And others, one corporal, one sergeant. The man, I don't think it was two corporals. It was one corporal. It was one in Bob Compton.
And the sergeant would be this Nobby Clark you mentioned earlier. Yeah. So that, other than that, that stays the same. Now, I believe there's a couple of other things you remember while you were at Aldershot.
There was one funny thing in particular where, you know, I was talking about the time when we saw the march up to the church. Well, there was quite a lot of people in whether it was, you know, what's the name, to the Scots group, I don't know, but there was quite a few of them had quite good singing voices and they'd, you know, start singing at the top of the crowd. And we knew, although we were never told, that we were coming up to D-Day. And we were all writing our, you know, last letter home. And we're very quiet in this billet we were in. And somebody started saying, and you know what I'm talking about, Old Australian Homestead. And it's a very poignant song about the girl receiving a letter from the war, and I can't remember the thing about it. I can't remember the words of it. I know what how it goes, with her mother's arms round as she gave way to sobs and sighs. He played his father over the stake and left his heart in Suvla Bay. It was about Gallipoli really. And this went on for a few minutes and then somebody lobbed a boot at him. Which broke the spell. But there was another strange thing that happened there. They decided they would make sure that people could swim. So anybody who couldn't swim would have to report on the Sergeant Major Granger to go down to the swimming baths. So he was a bit of an idiot, Dave Granger. And he said, he got there and they got them all, you know, in their trunks or whatever it was, round the back. And he said, idiot he was, jump in. And some of them did, and he couldn't swim. So a hell of a job getting them out, the non-swimmers. And he said, what the hell did you jump in for? I said, you ordered us to. And, you know, it was just one of those stupid things. And I'm glad I didn't. I mean, I could just about swim across the, you know, the width of the baths. But it was a bit hairy, that. But then there wasn't much more happened at Aldershot. Oh, we all, you know, did that piece and went to the Garrison Theatre, which Phyllis Dixie was performing at, in a what's name. And the strange thing was there was more comments came out of the audience than ever came off the stage. Because, you know, she always had these nets off, you know. Well, of course, nets off to us was taking the camouflage nets off. And, you know, this you're getting shouting, nets off, you know. But it was just one of those stupid things. And eventually we moved off to, I can't remember, people say that they heard the planes, but no, it couldn't have been the planes going over, you know, for the invasion. But we got moved down to the sealed reception area, which was a wooded encampment. And they put an awful lot of work into these, you know, sort of encampments. And the one thing that sticks in my mind, which amused me, you'd always get some wag in the legend that would do something. And do you ever remember things about Chad, the half thing with the looking over a wall and what? No. And they'd built these temporary washhand things, and it was all cold water. And the thing that struck me most was this great big notice at the end: what? No what. Which, you know, really took the what's name. But what they did, and I forgot to mention this before, when they were doing the waterproofing, some of this stuff was, I can't remember what it was for, it was the stuff we put around the leads from the distributor. And it was malleable stuff, you know. But all the fellas, some of them were quite clever, I said, they modelled heads. And they put it on, you know, the cap on the radiator cap. And some of them painted them, and they were very, very good as well. But every truck that you know, sort of came into that holding area had one of these, you know, ornamental heads on the top of it. And that was my only time that I've ever played cards. And somebody told me about Australian pontoon, and I said, well, if the banker changes hands, you know, every so many times, you know, that it wasn't, you held the bank until so-and-so. I thought, well, you can't lose here. And I lost all my francs, my 200 francs that we got issued in about 10 minutes. So I didn't bother playing cards again. It was a moves game.
This would be the Seal camp in the Gosport area, near Southampton.
No, well, about halfway down, I would think. And, I mean, we didn't know where it was because everything was blanked out.
What sort of secrecy was there, I mean, at the time?
It was very tight, very, very tight indeed. I remember the regiment opposite to us when we were in Aldershot, the one that we were looking across the road, this main road up to the church, and they painted the walls, no lead, no second front, and they were confined to barracks till we moved. We could go out in the town, but we couldn't go to London, but there was a way of getting around that. You could go so far, but you'd have to get the tube in from there. So you didn't actually travel from Aldershot right into the heart of London, where you'd have got picked up in, you know what I'm saying. But I had one of my younger sisters actually was stationed in Kensington in the ATS there. So I did get down to see it a couple of times. And I stayed at the place where we had that meeting last time in London. I think I stayed there. I think it was going down the moor actually. And I'm sure I stayed there. But anyway, they eventually, I mean, this was a crazy part of it. They said, right, we're moving off. And they had a loud hail in there, and it was a bit eerie because they'd call such a section of commandos, and you'd see them all march out of the camp with faces blackened. And anyway, eventually we got the move down to Gosport. But they didn't tell us we were going to Gosport. This was the crazy thing. And as with every convoy, you'll always get a split in the convoy where, you know, somebody goes ahead and you get held up for some reason. And the next thing that happened to me was I then became lead truck with whatever gap had occurred. And this dispatch rider came swooning up to me and he said, you're on the wrong road here. So he said, where are you going? I said, you tell me, because I said, I don't know. And I said, even if I did know, I wouldn't know, because all the signs have been taken down. So eventually we got down to, we put on the right road. So we went down and we arrived at Gosport, that I knew it was then. And we were just outside the town, and it was getting dark then. And we just parked up in a row of, you know, sort of suburban houses, or whatever they were, on the verge outside, and, you know, so we had to bed down in the truck or whatever. And the thing that sticks in my mind, that we moved off at first light in the morning, and as we dropped down into, obviously, Gosport, you know, harbour, whatever it was, there was an old man came out, and he'd obviously served in the 1940s, and he came up to Bushy's front path. And when he saw us coming down, he did all the correct movements, as if he had a rifle. And what struck me at the time was, and it touched me, because this album, he was presenting arms to every truck that went past, as if we were officers, you know, this, that and that, and presenting arms. And I thought, oh, that brought it on together. Anyway, eventually we got loaded on the boat. And because I was with the B vehicle, we went on top deck.
Now, what boats were they? Were they the...
LCKs and the craft tanks. They were quite big ships. And
so the tanks were down below?
Tanks were down below. And we had a bit of a problem in because they haven't lashed them down properly, and we hit heavy water halfway across, and that called for volunteers to go on, of the crews, to go down and relash the tanks that were, you know, sort of causing a bit of a mayhem in the bottom part of the boat. And anyway,
did you help with that? Did you help with that?
No, no. It was just the tank crews that went down and did that, because they'd shackled them in when they came aboard. And anyway, we were towing, and you know what you hear the name, and I think they were called rhinos, and they were sort of what do you call them? They hadn't got any power. They floated, and they were about 10 foot long by about that. And what they carried in them, I don't know. But I think we had towed one or two. But anyway, some of them broke loose during the night.
Were they sort of lighters, or were they vehicles?
They were just containers that we were towing behind the box of, with some sort of stores in them. It could have been petrol or anything. The petrol we took with us were on the sides of these, on the top deck. They were lashed, these, I would think, bundles of jelly cans, obviously full of petrol, which probably about 50 what's things lashed together somewhere or other. But the idea was, if there was a fire, they could just pull a pin, and the whole lot just slid down into the channel, or whatever it was. It was, sort of an emergency sort of thing. But anyway, I can't remember what day. Days didn't count in those days. They were just a day. So eventually, when we got over, it calmed down.
It was round about the middle of June, right, the 16th of June, I think.
It was about D7, I think it was, to my memory.
It's a bit earlier than
7 days after, we went. But anyway, I think so, I can't remember. But anyway, we were given a lifeboat as such, and, oh, God almighty, anybody with any equipment on it wouldn't have kept them up. It was a long piece of, it was almost like cheap Macintosh stuff, but with a pattern on, and they were about that long.
A yard.
That wide. And you tied them around yourself, but you had a valve on. You had a tube from it, and you opened the valve and blew it up, and then sealed the valve. Anyway, when one of these rhinos hit us, this fella bailed out in the back of the truck, and he was panicking because he couldn't blow his lifeboat up. And he hadn't opened the valve. And he was, I can't open it. I don't think it would have kept us up very long anyway. Anyway, we got to the other side.
Well, was there many, as you were crossing, was the sea very crowded? I mean, were you in a big convoy?
I can't remember, to tell you the truth. I just can't remember. Obviously, everybody was very apprehensive, but when we got there, it was, there were only a sound of thing of activity. On the left of us, on the beach, there was a great big battleship or monitor, whatever they call them, and they were firing over towards the harbour. Because that wasn't, it hadn't been captured at the harbour at the time, and it was the harbour.
And which beach were you landing at?
Eh?
What beach were you landing
at? Well, I think it was Juno, but the others give a, sort of more detail about it. It was the village between so and so and so. I think it was the Canadian beach, Juno. I'm almost sure it was. And
what was the situation as you landed? You said you got ashore dry.
Because they ran off and went out on the next tide. Ran up the beach a bit and opened the doors and we came off. And the beaches were very well, the marshalling was very, very well done. We would come off last because the tanks would get up first, because they were on the bottom deck. So they would go. They'd get up partly and then start to shed their waterproofing stuff, because they couldn't drive very far with those on. I don't think we had any DD tanks with us. which were the ones that were that would float. And DD was, you got some of these, duplex drive, which was the drive taken from the main engine to the propellers that were on the back of them. And we went to a place, and I actually had visited this place, after the war, a place called Colley, C-U-L-L-Y.
Were you driving with the tanks there?
No, the tanks weren't there. They were all the B vehicles in this one particular field. The fetters and that sort of thing. And we were around. It was a field upon a bit of a rise like that. And there was enough to get, say, 50 vehicles in or something like that. And there were hedges there, so obviously we went like that across the back and down there. And there wasn't much activity, except that in the field we were, they had an Oster used to land. It would come in, land, and come down very low, drop down on the field, right to the other side, and then camouflage up. You never saw the pilots or anything. I think most of them were I think there were two in it. One was only the pilot, obviously, and the other would be at the observer. And I think they were spotters for the gunners. For the heavy gunners. And they were flitting in and out all the time.
Now, how many vehicles were there in your section? I mean, what vehicles did you have with you? About 12 of you. How many vehicles?
There'd be the two echelons there at the time. There'd be A and B. So there could have been, altogether 30 vehicles. With ammunition, petrol, and all next. And then when they start to go forward into action, they split off. The A echelon would follow in within reasonable distance of the tanks. The B echelon would sit tight for a bit because they were the quartermaster sergeants and those sort of stuff that went.
You were A echelon then, were you?
I was with A echelon at the time.
And how many vehicles did your section have? Your mechanics, fitters.
I was actually with A echelon, which was although as a fitter or classified as a fitter. I went second man on an ammunition truck. I think it was an ammunition truck, I can't remember which.
So you were the reserve driver?
Yeah.
And what truck were they using?
They were using, mainly Bedfords, the big high Bedfords, but there was also a lot of Canadian Fords. They were a much lower vehicle.
Which were better, the Bedfords or the Fords?
I think the Bedfords, until they dropped a light clangor with them. When we got so far into...
Hang on, we'll come back to that then. But at the time, so you were... Now, what was your role as second man on the ammunition at that time, before you start the action? What was you basically to have to do?
Just... I know it sounds funny, sort of... There isn't much you can't do. Your wagon was already loaded before we went to Normandy. So
you were just sat in this field, really?
Yeah. And with very little marksmen, very little activity, obviously.
Well, what sort of billets did you have? I mean,
we didn't have any billets. There was no such thing as a tentage of any sort.
Because the tank crew had those things.
Oh, yeah.
That you didn't have them?
No. We slept in the wagons, actually. I know what you were sitting on there. Very exclusive, lots and everything. But what we used to do was when we decided that the what's name, we had a very good idea, the camouflage nets, they were an absolute disaster, so we only used them once. That's why we lost such a lot of wagons. Because when we actually did go into action...
I'll come back to that. So did you have the camouflage... You didn't have the camouflage nets on in this field?
Oh, no.
So you're just out in the open?
Yeah. Well, we're up against the hedges. What the difference that was going to make. And apparently, I didn't actually see it, but they were digging the trains, obviously, they got after the trains. And they did, every now and again, the jetties would send, you know, a spotter plane going out of the speed. And somebody, I don't know what happened, but these slit trenches were open slit trenches. And
you dug slit trenches,
well, you? Well, you know, for your toilets. And apparently, I don't know what happened, but the MO took a dive, he's diving for cover, and it was half full, the train, and somebody else jumped on top of him, which gave him a blighty because he knocked him out and jumped on his head or something. A very quick move to get back to blighty. But
what about your food there? What was that like?
I think if I remember rightly, we were getting fed from the cook's truck, which they had, you know, sort of big burners and that sort of thing. But there were some absolute disasters with that.
In what way?
Well, the cooks had no idea of how to do heated tin stuff. So they'd drop the tailboard like that, and we'd go over with our mess tins for whatever we wanted. There were some things, oh, I absolutely hated, such as oxtail, whatever it was, soup or something. And but they had these, they were like a treacle pudding stuff or something. And it was like a solid thing when they dropped it out onto the mess tin. But it had a syrup with it. I don't know what it was, treacle or some sort. And the first time they tried to open one after heating them, and they hadn't had the forethought to puncture them before they put them in the hot water. Well, when they came out, and we were all standing around like that, well, this cook, I think it was a cook there, cook side, and he gets his army. Well, anyway, stuck his, you know, the issue knife in. And everybody was standing around, got sprayed with it. So that was not a good idea, after all. You have to empty the tins into a bigger container and then sort of cook it up with an open top to it. But there was very little happened there. And we thought, what the hell's going on? Apparently we heard later that there was a hold-up because I think that was the time we hit this big storm. And it delayed some of the follow-up troops. I think we were supposed to go in, but you didn't learn till after, that with the 15 Scottish. But they were delayed, you know, on coming over, and, you know, they couldn't assemble them. So actually, we did move off. And I'll always remember what you always worked to a centre line. And I always remember what the centre line was. It was top hat. And it was a black background with a white top hat. You know, sort of emblazoned on it. No words, just that was it. That was the sign, top hat. And because that turned out to be Epsom, that battle. And of course, they carried it to ridiculous proportions in the end. But our first time the Padre came into the equation, and he was an absolute character. He showed no fear at all under any circumstances. He would never, you know, sort of.
What was his name?
I didn't know his name at the time. I just called him the Padre, but somebody told me it was Walsh, which didn't sound a very Scottish name to me. But he was a Church of Scotland, I think, Padre. And I don't know whether this was right or not, because it's just the sort of thing that he would do. He had. What we call, what we used to call a buzz box, which was an Austin PU, which was only about a 500 weight, with a soft top. And he used to drive around in that, well, he had a driver driving around in that. And I'm sure that we were told that if there was a break in the action, the party would be supplying keys at his, you know, at his vehicle. And I don't know whether he did it or not, but if one of our officers had come along in the middle of battle and seen people queuing up with their mugs for a brewer tea, I don't know what would have happened. Anyway, we went through Bretville, and then we went into a bit of open country then.
This is on the 26th of June, the first day of Epsom.
And we went down a dip, and they said, oh, like, the wagons aren't going up any further till next day. So we were held up there, and somebody, you know, myths arrive and arise, and they say that during the night, a sniper who had been hanging about, a German sniper who stayed behind, and just tied themselves up trees, and he dropped down and gave himself up to the padre, and he must have been overlooking where we were all sleeping, you know. I don't know whether that was true or not, but it's very possible it was.
So this night, was this the first night after the first day of battle?
This was the first day of battle was the day we got our unit went through Sher, which was, and you know, to this day I still don't think it's the same road we went down. It was a road we made ourselves, or the engineers made themselves, and we dropped down.
And what happened during that first day to you?
The day we got up, caught up with the action. Well, we went through part of that village, and I looked down the other main part, through the main part of the village, and there were two or three, and they must have been rifle brigade people, their half tracks knocked out, and you know, it looked like a set from a film, a battle of a, you know, what's name scene. And we dropped down into through part of the village and went, I think they'd knocked the wall down, so we didn't go through the whole village. And we came onto this field. And every book you open, there is a picture of this field. You know, it's just like an open field. But it was about from here to the houses, that house at the top of the road there. But there was a sunken lane. And the fellow who was the driver of the vehicle I was with was... Joe Nickel. I've got a shoe picture of him there. And he had a brother with the unit. And
he was always your driver, was he?
For the time, but yeah, at the time. Anyway, we went in and we parked in the field, and we did what we were supposed to do, put our nets on. So we put our nets on, and then I said to... we were.
And which village was this?
It was Sher.
It was actually Sher itself?
Yeah. It was just outside Sher, you know, just on the outskirts of Sher. And it's at a right pace in Sher. And anyway, one of our tanks came back down the shrunken lane. I could just see the turret of it. And I said, Joe Nickel it was, the driver. And I said, hey, Joe. I said, then I'll go out and see how the tanks are getting on. And who should it be but Brownlee, Lieutenant Brownlee. And I went on, I said, how are things going on, sir, you know, respectful to him. And he said, and he said, who the hell put you in that field? I said, I don't know, because he said, it's getting stomped regularly. And he said, you know, I said, he said, whoever it was shouldn't have put you there.